Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynmouth Area Talking newspaper. Today is Friday the 3rd of October, and we are the Yellow Team. And unfortunately, after a lovely week of sunny weather, it's gone a bit cloudy and it did rain overnight, but still we're in a happy mood. And I'm going to be joined by three readers from our team for this week's programme, and they'll introduce themselves later. But first, some dates for your diaries. Right, there's quite a lot. So, on Monday afternoon, the 6th of October, the book club for visually impaired people will meet at Dawlish Library from 2 till 4pm. And this is on the first Monday of every month. So the next one will be on the 3rd of November and the same time. Also on Monday the 6th, Holcombe Ladies Social Club meet at 7:30. Now, Dawlish Community Transport are going on several walks. Dawlish Community Transport are going on several outings. And the first one is on Tuesday the 7th of October to Firmoys. Price £15.50. Now, the next one is on the Tuesday afternoon, the same date, which is the 7th of October, the Dawlish History Society meet at the Manor in Dawlish. On Wednesday afternoon, Cofton WI meet at St Mary's Church Hall in Dawlish Warren, starting at 2:30. On Thursday, at 8pm, the Rotary Club quiz is at the Castle Inn in Holcombe, starting at 8 o'clock. And on the Friday of next week, there's a quiz night at the church at Kenton, but I'm afraid I don't have a starting time for that. Apparently, my colleague tells me it starts at 7:30, so there's a quiz night at the church at Kenton this coming next Friday, starting at 7:30. And on Monday the 13th of October, the following week, Holcombe Lunch Club restarts at the Castle Inn, again at Holcombe, 12:30pm. And on Tuesday the 14th of October, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Tiverton. Cost is £21. And on Wednesday the 15th of October, Holcombe Garden Society meet at the Village Hall for a talk by Derek Dexter on Fuchsia's My Way. And there's quite a few events all happening on Saturday the 18th of October. At 10am, Dawlish Garden Society meet at the Manor at 10am for a talk entitled 52 Weeks of Colour. And from 10:30 to 2pm on the same day, that's Saturday the 18th of October, there's a tabletop sale at the Hub in Shoreditch. And the same Saturday at 7pm, at All Saints Church, Kenton, there is a piano and clarinet concert. The cost for that is £14. And finally, on the same Saturday, the 18th of October, at 8 o'clock, at the Victory Hall in Kenton, there is a quiz in aid of the Force Cancer Charity. £3 per person. Book a table by calling Pete on 01626 890 6201. That's 01626 890 6201. And I think that's it. Quite a lot for you to remember there. Right, here are this week's headline stories. Urgent safety action required for Main Road, a missed opportunity for Tynmouth.
Hello, my name's Sue Smallwood. and our first article today is entitled Pedestrians Terrified Trying to Cross Road. Safety concerns along a major Dawlish road are to be brought to the attention of Devon County Council's highways boss. Calls have been made for improved safety along the A379, including better pedestrian crossings. Now, County Councillor Rosie Dawson has secured a visit from the Cabinet Minister for Highways to tour the, in quotes, numerous points of concern on Exeter Road. In November last year, a petition demanding better safety measures was signed by hundreds of people following a fatal road accident. A woman in her 80s died following a collision between a car and a mobility scooter. Councillor Dawson has already asked for a crossing at Segmenton Lane to be added to the list of schemes for funding. She explained, schemes are agreed and budgeted for each year, so don't happen instantly. Speed of traffic is one of the main concerns, with calls for a speed camera to be installed where the limit drops from 40 miles per hour to 30 miles per hour on the A379 before the turning at Warren Road. Others have suggested the limit from Sainsbury's all the way into Dawlish town centre should be reduced to 30 miles per hour. The potential danger of crossing from the Claremont Manor care home and surrounding properties to Sainsbury's has been raised as a major issue. Some say they are absolutely terrified trying to get to the supermarket. Coming back, there is a blind corner which, it is claimed, drivers approach the roundabout too fast and some neglect to indicate. One resident said, I know there are traffic lights at Segmenton Lane, but it is actually a heck of a walk all the way down and back again just to simply cross the road, especially if you're not very mobile. We have some very dangerous drivers speeding on this stretch of the road. The junction with Warren Road is also considered to be an accident waiting to happen, with vehicles travelling over the hill well in excess of the 30 miles per hour limit, making turning into Warren Road a nightmare. Traffic lights have been suggested for that junction, or a redesign with curbs reduced on both sides. Along parts of the A379, there are complaints of poor visibility for pedestrians. It has also been suggested Shutterton Lane could be one way to avoid emerging traffic onto the A379. But pedestrian crossings are a major problem for many. Councillor Dawson said, there is a noticeable lack of attention by drivers at all zebra crossings, I think. I often record my feet whilst crossing so I can get footage of cars ploughing through. It's the only way to make people take others' safety seriously. Calls for drop curb at Segmenton Lane to help wheelchair users and parents with prams and pushchairs appear to be already on the cards in the future. Devon County Council is understood to have agreed that it is a priority to be delivered in the 2026-27 programme of works. And there are two coloured photos. There's one of the 379 towards Sainsbury's by the place, I think it's a car wash now. And then there's another one with a photograph of one of the pedestrian crossings with the headline over it, Cabinet Member will tour the numerous points of concern. So we'll see what happens.
Good morning, it's Maggie West here, and my first story is entitled Missed Opportunity for Tynmouth. Boatyard developers vow to push ahead. The team behind a scheme to redevelop the Riverside Boatyard in Tynmouth will continue pursuing the project despite Teignbridge District Council planners refusing planning permission for a second time. Planners cited multiple concerns, notably ecological impact, flood risk and heritage. The applicants, Tynmouth Maritime Properties, which owns the site, and planning agent MJS Planning and Designs, said they were deeply disappointed with the decision, describing it as a missed opportunity for Tynmouth. They are now considering various legal options, although they remain open to revising the plans through further discussions with Teignbridge. Our commitment to Tynmouth is unchanged, they said, and they vowed to engage constructively to find a solution that delivers the jobs, community spaces and investment that the town needs, while respecting the environment and unique character of Tynmouth. The scheme had already received the unanimous backing of Tynmouth Town Council, and dozens of local residents had written letters of support. TMP said, Its vision was to regenerate the derelict boatyard with a mix of commercial, residential and community uses. Its proposal featured 9 new industrial units for local businesses, 9 holiday-let beach huts to boost tourism and reduce pressure on the rental market, and 6 much-needed new homes that would make the regeneration of the site a viable economical. Plans also included a new river wall and flood defences, as well as community facilities such as a classroom space, a food bank, a community hub, and offices for non-profit groups. The scheme would have created over 100 jobs and added more than £5 million per year to the local economy. There would also have been significant contributions through the planning system, with over £750,000 pledged towards local infrastructure and around £180,000 for affordable housing, and approximately £60,000 for ecological enhancements. While acknowledging the Teignbridge responsibility to consider issues like wildlife and flooding, the applicants believed many of the objections could have been easily resolved with further technical work or minor changes, rather than an outright refusal. They noted that new policies in Teignbridge Emergency Local Plan are expected to support redevelopment of brownfield sites, like the Riverside Boatyard, even in sensitive coastal areas, which they feel should have been given far greater weight. Planning officers argued that the redevelopment, which included building new homes on reclaimed estuary land, posed a risk to protected habitats and flood safety. The official decision raised concerns about harm to the Teign estuary's intertidal wildlife, particularly blue mussel beds, and questioned whether sufficient flood defences and drainage measures were in place. It also raised concerns that the project's scale and design might affect the undeveloped coastline and could even have potential to cause harm to the nearby Grade 2 listed Shoreden Bridge. Other issues listed by the council were lack of affordable housing provision and concerns over meeting climate change and water quality requirements. The developers said they will carefully review the council's detailed reason for refusal, and they remain committed to improving the site. And there is a lovely coloured photograph of the river, the existing boatyard with Bishop's Tainton and part of Teignmouth behind.
Hello, I'm Linda Bowman. My first article is entitled Fears for the Future of Black Swan's Eggs. The future for any new eggs laid by the Dawlish Black Swans appears to be bleak. Any eggs laid on the flimsy nest are likely to be infertile, the town's waterfowl wardens have warned. There have been fears for the survival of any eggs laid, as the breeding pair, Bert and Kimber, have made the makeshift nest on a small, low-lying island in the brook. Previously, they have nested either on a man-made site, high above the waterline, at Tuck's plot, or in rushes alongside the brook. At least 3 eggs have been laid. Onlookers have said they believe ongoing work by Southwest Water on the lawn may have disturbed and confused the pair. It has also been noticed Bert and Kimber are not behaving in the way they have with previous nests. One said, "Bert is normally in a guarding and chasing off mode, but is definitely different this time. They are not settled and the nest isn't comfy either." The Southwest Water Works have clearly thrown them. The owners of holiday accommodation Pilchard Cottage have been keeping a watchful eye on the pair. They said, "It's not looking too positive this time. The gulls were circling very close by this morning. I wonder if that's why Bert has taken the lead in protecting the eggs so far, as usually Kimber spends most of her time on the nest." Concerns had already been made about the location of the nest close to the waterline. Dawlish town councillors received a report from the wardens at a meeting of the Civic Amenities Committee. Members also raised concerns about the less than ideal location. Wardens are monitoring the situation closely, as they were concerned the eggs are not being looked after, possibly suggesting it is infertile. The wardens are continuing to check on the swans and may intervene if necessary. And there's a photograph of the one of the swans. I'm not sure whether it's Bert or Kimber. And there's a very insecure looking nest and containing the three eggs.
Dawlish Hospital unit shuts again. Health bosses have announced Dawlish Hospital's minor injuries unit will be closed again. This time the unit, which reopened last year, will be shut until the end of this week. Anyone with an urgent but not life-threatening injury or condition is advised to go to the Urgent Treatment Centre at Newton Abbott Hospital. A spokesman for Torbay and South Devon NHS Trust said, "We sincerely apologise for any inconvenience this may cause and thank you for your understanding." The closure is described as temporary, but the unit has been closed numerous times over the last 6 months due to staff shortages or illness. The unit, which opens Monday to Friday to treat minor injuries such as cuts, sprains and scalds, was previously shut for 4 years until campaigners called for it to reopen.
Blue plaque honours former bank manager. A former Tynemouth bank manager has been recognised for his contribution to astronomy. A blue plaque commemorating the establishment of the Torbay Astronomical Society by J. Hedley Robinson was unveiled last Saturday, September the 20th. The plaque ceremony and civic reception at Torquay Town Hall marked 70 years since Hedley Robinson founded the Torbay Astronomical Society in August 1956. The event was attended by Torbay Deputy Mayor, Councillor Hazel Foster, members of the Torbay Civic Society and the Torbay Astronomical Society, and Hedley Robinson's grandson. Hedley Robinson worked for Midland Bank and before retiring in 1965 was second officer at the Dawlish branch. However, his spare time was devoted to stargazing. After retiring, Hedley Robinson served as a director of the British Astronomical Association's Mercury and Venus section until 1980. He was awarded the prestigious Walter Goodacre Medal in recognition of his contribution to the progress of astronomy. He was also the founder and president of the Devonshire Astronomical Association. Well known for the observatory he had in his Tynemouth garden, he counted Sir Patrick Moore as one of his friends. Sharing his passion and knowledge about astronomy was important to him. He frequently gave talks and ran courses on astronomy and authored numerous scientific papers and articles. He also wrote three books: The Astronomy Data Book in 1972, Using the Telescope in 1978, and God and the Universe in 1988. Hedley Robinson also chaired the Tynemouth Probus Group in the mid-70s. The Torbay Astronomical Society used Torquay Town Hall as a meeting venue for several years. The Society now meets at Torquay Boys Grammar School, where it retains an observatory. Hedley Robinson died in 1991 at the age of 86, following a short illness. And there is a photograph here of the blue plaque being unveiled by Councillor Hazel Foster.
Tynemouth Lifeboat in call for volunteers. Tynemouth Royal National Lifeboat Institute, the RNLI, is on the hunt for more volunteers to support its life-saving activities after several members of the team have announced they are moving on. Roles available include fundraising, community engagement, managing the lifeboat station shop, and shore crew. The vacancies have arisen for reasons including relocation, ill health, and volunteers moving to support other areas of the RNLI. Our fundraising and engagement team plays a crucial role in connecting with both visitors and the local community to ensure we have the funds needed to keep our crews ready to respond at a moment's notice, a spokesperson from Tynemouth RNLI said. The current RNLI Tynemouth volunteer shop manager, who is reluctantly standing down due to ill health, said, "I have just loved every minute of it.
It has been a golden opportunity to meet so many lovely people, both inside and outside of the RNLI. The small but beautifully presented shop at Tynmouth Lifeboat Station sells RNLI merchandise and is open 11 months of the year. Another vital fundraising position is that of treasurer. As a charity funded entirely by public donations, the RNLI Tynmouth treasurer records income, tracks expenditure, and keeps the charity's accounts in order. The current fundraising treasurer is moving away from the area with her husband, who is also one of the Tynmouth Boathouse Visits volunteers. The new fundraising treasurer will benefit from detailed handover from the current treasurer, who reflected, "I have taken pride in being part of such a motivated team and ensuring that every donated penny is handled with the integrity and transparency that the public expects, protecting the RNLI's reputation and its mission." Tynmouth RNLI's fundraising and engagement team chair has also announced plans to step down at the end of 2025 to pursue other volunteer opportunities within the RNLI. The chair plays a pivotal role in the life of Tynmouth Lifeboat Station and ensures that the resources, funding and community support are in place to keep the lifeboat operational. She plans to still be around and to hand over to the new chair and has described her time in the role as a privilege. The fundraising and engagement team are all so committed to the RNLI's cause and so enthusiastic about contributing to our station and to showing the local community how well everyone at Tynmouth Lifeboat Station works together under our one crew ethos to raise essential funds, she commented. On the operational side, Tynmouth RNLI is also recruiting new members of its shore crew team. The shore crew help launch the lifeboat, manage the safety of the area during a launch, and refuel and service the boats when they return from a shout or training exercise. Anyone interested in volunteer roles with Tynmouth RNLI should contact the RNLI community manager, Jason Luff, by emailing jason-luff@rnli.org. Tynmouth RNLI operates from the original 1862 boathouse near the Point car park and carries out around 50 rescues each year. Volunteers play an essential role in providing the 24-hour search and rescue service, which is funded entirely by voluntary donations and legacies. And there's a photograph of what I imagine are the whole of number of volunteers, which look to be at least a couple of dozen, including a dog. And I'm not sure what they service they provide, but outside the boathouse.
Charlie thanked for 30 years' service to the RNLI. A Tynmouth lifeboat volunteer has been recognised for his dedication and commitment to serving the life-saving Royal National Lifeboat Institute for 30 years. Charlie Woolnough is one of the launch authorities at Tynmouth RNLI. In his role, he authorises the launch of the lifeboat and volunteer crew after a call is received. Previously, he spent 13 years as lifeboat operations manager at Tynmouth Lifeboat Station, and he has also served as helm, part of the launch authority team, and as a tractor driver. Charlie was presented with a medal in recognition of an incredible 30 years of dedicated service to the RNLI by Area Operations Manager Nigel Jones during a training exercise last Thursday, September the 18th. 30 years of volunteering with the RNLI is an incredible achievement. Charlie's dedication and commitment over so many years has made a huge difference to our station, our crew, and ultimately the people whose lives we've been able to save, said Tynmouth RNLI's current lifeboat operations manager, Andy Lilburn. On behalf of everyone here at Tynmouth RNLI, I offer a heartfelt thank you and congratulations on reaching this incredible milestone. On receiving his award, Charlie commented that it had been an honour to volunteer for such a wonderful charity and a privilege to serve alongside a great team of people. And there's a colour photograph of Charlie receiving his long service medal. He's looking very pleased. The members of the crew and station that were there on training night are disappearing into the shadows at the back of him.
No one needs to be lonely this Christmas. There's no reason for Tynmouth residents to be lonely this Christmas after the Alice Cross Centre announced it has now opened reservations for its festive lunch on December the 25th. The annual event is prepared and served by local volunteers and ensures that people who might otherwise spend Christmas Day alone can enjoy a hot meal, companionship and festive cheer. Christmas can be a difficult time for many, particularly those experience isolation or hardship, said Alice Cross Centre General Manager Petra Howell. The Alice Cross Centre's Christmas Day dinner provides not only a hot meal, but also a sense of belonging, conversation and kindness. So anyone wishing to attend should book via the Alice Cross Centre website or by calling 01626 778039.
Beaches are dog friendly again. Dog owners can enjoy Teignbridge's beaches alongside their four-legged friends this month, now the annual ban is lifted. As of October the 1st, the ban, which bars dogs from Tynmouth, Shoreden, Dawlish and Dawlish Warren beaches, was lifted. Each year, the ban comes into force from April and lasts until September the 30th. We are lucky to have some beautiful beaches in the district and we want to keep them clean, safe and enjoyable for everyone, says a spokesperson for Teignbridge District Council. Please remember to clean up after your dog, as it helps keep our beaches pleasant for all visitors and prevents the spread of diseases that can affect people and pets, the spokesperson added. There are around 400 designated dog waste bins across Teignbridge, which are regularly emptied.
Best Foot Forward has run marks 7 years. It was a special morning on Saturday at Tynmouth Seafront as 436 runners and 39 volunteers gathered to celebrate the 7th birthday of Tynmouth Promenade Park Run. The event started on September the 29th, 2018. Since then, participants have run nearly 75,000 park runs, equivalent to running around the planet Earth 9 times. The invitation of seaside-themed fancy dress to celebrate this occasion was taken up by a number of runners and walkers to celebrate the event. There were a variety of sea creatures, with lobsters and seagulls being very popular. Lifeguards and mermaids were well represented, and there were a good variety of seaside paraphernalia worn in various ways. Parkrun has been a fantastic success for Tynmouth, and without the huge team of volunteers turning out each week, the event simply could not happen. And there are a number of colour photographs from the run. There's one with a group of people on steps at the promenade with, it looks like he's got furry claws, but there's a crab, I think he is, on prominent at the front. There's two guys obviously having good fun, dressed in lobster outfits with the heading underneath of shell-ebrating in style. There's some of the lifeguards lined up, 4 of the lifeguards, all looking nicely tanned, nice bare legs. And there's a lovely looking little girl dressed up as a mermaid with the heading underneath her photograph of participants dressed up in some mermazing outfits for the seaside themed run. And a group of the volunteers holding up their boards that they notify runners how long they might have been running for. And they're all standing on a wall on the seafront.
Council refuses school nursery expansion bid. A Teignbridge primary school's bid to expand its nursery provision by installing a new unit on its grounds has been rejected by planners. Submitted by Shaldon Primary School, the application sought permission for a single-storey modular nursery building to provide dedicated nursery facilities, including a multi-use hall, office, quiet room, kitchenette, storage and toilets. But Teignbridge District Council refused to grant planning permission. The proposed building is considered to be of poor, low quality and unsympathetic design and utilises inappropriate and unsympathetic materials, the council said. It's considered to be out of keeping with the character of the area and fails to preserve or enhance the Shaldon Conservation Area and wider setting of the nearby Grade 1 listed Church of St Peter. The risk of flooding and the arboricultural impact of the proposals were also cited as reasons behind their decision. The proposal would provide a fuller educational offering to the local community, the Design, Access and Heritage Statement says. It will also offer 9 new staff positions directly linked to the nursery. At present, the school offers a non-residential educational setting for 4 to 11-year-olds. The provision of the nursery building will extend this provision to facilitate a much-needed preschool offering on the site, a provision for which there is a deficit locally. Shaldon Primary School was among 5 Devon schools that received awards from the Department for Education School-Based Nursery Capital Grant. The grant was for schools to either build new nurseries or expand their existing facilities. And there is a photograph of Shaldon Primary School in all its rather quaint Victorian glory.
Application for new cookery school gets the green light. A new cookery school at a Shaldon farm has taken the next step to becoming a reality as a change of use application is given the green light. Submitted by the Towell family, the application sought permission to convert an agricultural building at New Barn Farm into a cookery school. The application also included provision for accommodation, drainage and landscaping. According to the planning statement, the change of use will provide agricultural diversification in a manner that provides unique and innovative tourist accommodation in this rural area, which will in turn serve to support the continued prosperity of the rural economy. Visitors to the cookery school will be journeying to the site to experience the agricultural setting and learn skills relating to produce from the agricultural business and surrounding businesses, the planning statement goes on to say. And Teignbridge District Council have granted planning permission, albeit subject to conditions, chiefly the submission of further documentation, such as a construction management plan and a landscape and ecological management plan. The development hereby permitted shall begin before the expiry of 3 years from the date of this permission. The application received several contributions of support. This application should be supported as diversification is essential for smaller farms to survive, said one supporter. The cookery school would create opportunities for local chefs, producers and suppliers, which is good for the community, said another. The extra income brought in for all the local trades will be such a bonus, another said. Shaldon Parish Council raised no objection to the application. The Towell family have owned and run New Barn Farm since 1985, with the family having farmed in Ringmore since the early 20th century. The change of use was inspired by the field-to-fork concept, which emphasises the journey of food from its origin, the field, to consumer's plate, the fork, highlighting the importance of understanding where food comes from and the process of getting it to the table. The scheme demonstrates a strong functional link to agriculture, as a cookery school will utilise produce from the farm holding and adjacent holdings to promote the field-to-fork concept, the planning statement adds.
Is that no hang-ups for seed swap scheme. Gardeners in Bishop Stainton will be able to exchange seeds and plants thanks to the launch of a phone box seed bank. The project was one of many suggested by the community after Bishop Stainton Parish Council acquired the redundant BT phone box earlier this year. Councillors reviewed a range of ideas, including an art gallery and library, at the September Parish Council meeting. They concluded that a seed swap and information centre for wildlife-friendly gardening and the community plot would be best suited for the village. The village wildlife wardens are now developing design plans for the inside of the box and finalising how seeds and plants will be displayed. Wildlife wardens will also hold a session with children from Bishop Stainton Primary School at the community plot and allotments to harvest seeds and explain why this is important for wildlife and ecology. In Newton Abbott, seeds that have been collected this year will be processed and packed at Newton Abbott Seed Library event at the Courtney Centre between 7 and 9 on October the 30th. Anyone is welcome to bring their own seeds to donate.
Care home worker Zoe earns diploma. A care home worker in Exminster is celebrating after successfully completing a diploma. Zoe Jones, a senior support worker at the Holt, has clinched the Level 3 Diploma in Adult Care, designed for professionals working in health and social care and focusing on leadership, complex care needs and person-centred support. She said, "When I first agreed to undertake the diploma, it felt like a leap of faith. I'd not considered further study before and I wasn't sure it would suit me." The Holt is a bungalow in Exminster run by Salutum Care and Education, which provides residents with learning disabilities or sensory needs around-the-clock care and support, but in their own personalised flats. Through her studies, Zoe developed a wide range of skills, including person-centred care, safeguarding, communication, conflict resolution, and leadership. She credits her success to the encouragement and flexibility offered by her manager, who ensured she had time to balance her studies with her day-to-day responsibilities. Leanne Bovey, Regional Director at Salutum Care and Education, said, "We're incredibly proud of Zoe for her hard work and dedication. She's an asset to our team, and this achievement will benefit both her colleagues and the individuals we support." With her qualification complete, Zoe is now looking forward to the next steps in her career. And there's a lovely photograph of Zoe herself holding up her diploma.
Right, today we have two obituaries. Anne Hopkins, peacefully at Croft Lodge on Saturday the 20th of September 2025. Beloved wife of the late Alan. Much loved mother to David, Stephen and Jane, and adored grandmother. A service of thanksgiving to celebrate her life will be held at Torbay Crematorium on Wednesday the 15th of October at 2:30 p.m, followed by an afternoon tea at Orstone Manor, Rockhouse Lane, Maidencombe. Family flowers only, and donations if desired to the MS Society in memory of Anne can be made online. And further inquiries to Oliver J. Knapman Funeral Service, 19 Orchard Gardens, Tynmouth. Telephone 01626 77 2080. And also, Frances Una Thornton passed away on Thursday the 25th of September 2025, aged 87 years. Beloved wife of the late Gordon, mother to Samantha, Tracy, Janice and Rita, and proud Nan and great Nan. Funeral service to be held at St John the Baptist, Bishop Stainton, on Friday the 24th of October 2025 at 11:30 a.m. Family flowers only, please. Donations, if desired, to Mind by Retiring Collection. And further details from Parker's Family Funeral Directors, Great Western House, 9 Devon Square, Newton Abbott. Telephone 01626 437 001.
Tynmouth Probus Club. Tynmouth Probus Club's Railway Buff member, Dr. David McVeigh, presented his specially illustrated story of the 200th anniversary of the railway on September the 27th. David posed the question where the railway might be in 50 years' time. Following a lively Q&A session, the vote of thanks was presented by Secretary John Polly. If any retired semi or semi-retired male readers in Tynmouth would like to know more about us, please visit our website www.tynmouth-probus-club.org.uk.
And now a report from Tynmouth and District U3A. Our guest speaker for the September presentation was Peter Isaacson from the Medical Detection Dog Charity. We learned about the super sniffers, specially trained dogs who use their superior sense of smell to detect and help many humans with certain medical conditions. Biodetection dogs are trained to detect even the tiniest of smells associated with diseases like cancer, Parkinson's and bacterial infections. This work will help in screening for diseases and improving care in hospitals, as well as developing faster, cheaper and non-invasive methods of diagnosis. Peter went on then to introduce us to medical alert assistance dogs and their owners. These dogs support people with complex medical health conditions, which are potentially life-threatening. Using the power of their noses, these dogs are trained to detect even the faintest change in the smell of their human partner. They can detect and alert oncoming medical episodes for cardiac conditions, adrenal problems, diabetes and severe allergies. This enables their human partner to be aware of an episode about to occur so they can take the necessary action and prevent hospital admission. This reduces ambulance calls, hospital stays and gives confidence and peace of mind to their partners and their family. For further information, please go to www.medicalcalldetectiondogs.org.uk.
Cheers for the blues with folk legend Beer. The Phil Beer Trio make a welcome return to Pavilions Tynmouth next week. It's an opportunity to see world-renowned multi-instrumentalist Beer share the blues roots of his musical life. Supported by his longtime collaborator Miranda Sykes on bass guitar and Sean Monahan on percussion, they will confidently guide you through the music of Blind Willie Johnson, the Reverend Gary Davis, Davy Graham and John Mayall. Following the success of his 2020 album The Blues Hour, the show promises three great musicians at the top of their game, combining effortlessly to create an evening of songs and random anecdotes from an extraordinary life in music. Tickets for the October the 8th gig can be booked at the venue's www.pavilionstynmouth.org.uk. And there is a photograph of Phil Beer with his long white hair and beard and his two younger ladies who are accompanying him.
Pop a doodle doo time with DJ Tony. Legendary DJ Tony Blackburn, OBE, is bringing his Sounds of the 60s show back to Torquay's Princess Theatre next autumn. An evening of 60s classical music performed by the Sounds of the 60s all-star band and singers and hosted by Tony will play at the venue next September. It hasn't given a date, it's just saying September. Featuring stories and songs from perhaps the most iconic 10 years in music, fashion and popular culture, the Sounds of the 60s tour will bring to life memories of that magical era. Every night feels like a celebration, not just of the songs, but of the memories they bring back. 2026 is going to be another fantastic year for the tour, and I can't wait to travel the country with this amazing band, sharing the music I've loved my whole life. And there is a colour photograph of a grey-haired Tony Blackburn, grey hair, pale coloured suit. I think he's had his face airbrushed because there's no wrinkles showing anyway. He's looking very good for his 80-odd years.
Exeter Chiefs duo win Women's World Cup. Exeter Chiefs can now boast two Rugby World Cup winners in their squad after Maddie Fionati and Claudia Maloney McDonald helped England's women to lift the trophy with a thrilling victory over Canada at Twickenham on Saturday. The victory also adds to a golden summer for women's sport in England, coming months after the Lionesses retained their European football crown in July. And for Tynmouth Rugby Club, there's a rather a special event this coming Sunday, because Claudia and Maddie will be visiting there on October the 5th for Rugby Fest. This initiative is aimed to encourage more girls to get involved in the sport following their success. When we applied to host a rugby fest at Tynmouth, there was a competition for a Red Rose to attend, and we were one of the lucky clubs, said Tynmouth RFC head of women's and girls rugby, Paul Scott. The rugby fest runs from 11:30 a.m. until 1:30 p.m. and involves fun games aimed at introducing rugby to girls who have never played. Claudia and Maddie will be around to chat to participants, I apologise, and answer questions and pose for photographs. And there's a lovely photograph of the two girls, obviously celebrating their win, side by side, smiling and holding a rugby ball.
Just the ticket for lucky winner Imogen. It was a Willy Wonka moment for student Imogen Earp when she found a golden ticket. But for organisers of a competition to win entry to Devon's Top Attractions, it was the end of a three-year mystery. The Devon's Top Attractions golden ticket was one of just two tickets which had been hidden in a special Rowcroft Hospice South Devon Monopoly edition. The game has been bought from the Rowcroft Hospice shop in Newton Abbot as an 18th birthday present for Imogen. But it remained unopened while Imogen was away at university, and the ticket's whereabouts were unknown. When she finally opened the game, the second golden ticket was tucked inside. It gives her a year of free entry for up to four people at all of Devon's top attractions. Imogen said, "I was thrilled to find the golden ticket in my Monopoly game, but had no idea it was in there. I'm looking forward to getting out and about with my family and revisiting some of my childhood favourite places in Devon. It's such a wonderful prize and I want to visit as many attractions as I can." Golden tickets had been hidden inside just two boxes at the Hasbro Monopoly packing factory to help boost sales of the charity Localised Edition. Each Monopoly game purchased helped raise vital funds for Rowcroft Hospice. The special edition launched in 2022 and features well-loved local landmarks and businesses. Mark Hawkins, CEO of Rowcroft Hospice, said, "We are really pleased the missing and much sought-after final golden ticket has finally been found and that Imogen can now enjoy a year of free days. The Rowcroft Monopoly project provided us with a new and creative income stream for the hospice to support patients with life-limiting illnesses across South Devon, and we're so grateful to everyone who supported it. The charity project not only shone a spotlight on the unique character of South Devon, but also raised much-needed funds to help Rowcroft deliver its vital services."
Cherished Fire Dog wins award. Devon's cherished fire service dog, Digby, has won a BBC Radio Devon Make a Difference Award in recognition of his comforting presence and support within the community. Specially trained to offer comfort and support, Digby, who has been a permanent member of the Devon and Somerset Fire and Rescue Service since 2018, plays a vital role in helping both firefighters and members of the public during challenging times. whether he is greeting crews returning from challenging incidents or being deployed to support people in crisis, Digby brings a unique and calming presence to every situation, says a spokesperson for the rescue service. Digby can be found at stations and sites across both Devon and Somerset, or at the service headquarters in Exeter, where he regularly makes the rounds to lift spirits and connect with colleagues. His presence opens conversations that people might not otherwise feel ready to have, and that can make all the difference. To see him recognised in this way is incredibly special and a testament to the role he plays in improving well-being across our service and beyond, said his owner, Matt. And there is a photograph of a very cuddly-looking chocolate brown Digby. He looks, I don't know whether it's told us what he is, but he looks like he's a cockapoo or something like that. Very friendly, very lovable, and he's wearing a red collar, so he's, you know, he's bang on trend.
And now we have a look at some small snippets from the Tynmouth Post and Gazette that was published on Friday the 10th of October in 1975, and I think it just highlights that some things never change. Rural bus services. Comprehensive surveys are needed to find ways of improving public transport for the rural areas of Devon poorly served or without buses at all. The first should look at the transport needs of the Teen Valley and the Little Dart Valley. In some cases, it might be necessary to provide financial support while the experiment gets underway. Saturday Post, and in bracket, in days of yore. The Urban Council decided that local postmen should have a half-day holiday on Saturdays, and there should be no afternoon deliveries on Saturdays. One member said, "I find it inconvenient to have to wait for letters from Saturday morning to Monday morning." You should be around now, mate.
That brings us to the end of this week's edition of Here and Now, recorded at our studio in Dawlish on Friday the 3rd of October. And we hope you have enjoyed the programme. And please don't forget to return your wallets and USBs as soon as you've finished listening. If you need to contact us for any reason, the telephone number is 07376 147374. I'll repeat that, 07376 147374. Please leave your name and telephone number on the answering service and we will ring you back. Our editor this week was Jean Cole, the copier is Lynn Yates and the dispatcher is Lynn Yates. The programme was produced and directed by Ian Ferguson. So it's time for us to say goodbye from our readers, Sue Smallwood, Maggie West and Linda Bowman.
Bye.
And from me, Jean Cole, goodbye.